So I've just started the broadcast, and I think we'll start with a wee bumper. That's traditional.
What's the matter, darling?
I'm so sorry. So sorry. I burnt your dinner.
Don't worry, darling. You didn't burn the Jim Groom's. Jim Groom beer. The beer for any emergency.
Ooh, there seems to be a long silent tail out in that one. So I'll just get on with it. This is the DS-106 Good Spell, futzing splendidly since 2003 on a DS-106 radio for life. This is one of 106 bullets, or almost one of 106 bullets from blog post 106 published by the DS-106 rink at 10 a.m. on Tumblr at the end of the headless 13 run of DS-106. Our hashtag for tonight is #106spell. This is gospel radio for the DS-106 generation. Mantras and Koans explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. For the last time live, as Ron says.
Yeah.
Has he got a plan for us for tonight? After tonight, we're not going to be live after this.
No. And we are, this is an interesting show because we have covered 106 bullets and we're now on bullet 107. That spare one you always keep in the cartridge belt just in case of emergencies. And even more exciting, we've got Jim Groom with us in the virtual studio. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, John, Mariana. Thank you for having me on DS-106 Radio for Life.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the bullet for tonight, the spare bullet, comes from Jim, I think. And this is it. It's Therein Lies Point 107 for your list, letting go. DS-106 means letting it all happen with whoever wants to make it their own for whatever reason. For it to be truly great, it must contain multitudes and serve the one-off assignment, the community, as well as a random search on Google equally. DS-106 is the web, just with fewer trolls. So we'll just hang up now. I think that's pretty good. That's enough for tonight. That's a kind of lovely sentiment, Jim. And you're in sunny Italy.
I am.
Though I guess the sun's
that's
probably...
That's right. That's where DS-106 brought me.
It's brilliant. I've turned the oven up in my kitchen, especially tonight, so that I feel warm. Because it's not nice here, but I'm guessing it's lovely down there.
Well, Scotland was beautiful in April when I went there. I think we only got snowed on twice.
And I'm not telling you how lovely our weather has been, John, because I'll just upset you.
It's good. It's the air is fresh and whatever. So we're hopefully going to drag in a few other people just to say hello later on tonight and stretch this Skype call and the DS-10 tubes to see how fat the pipe is and how many voices we can get in. But I thought we'd have a wee chat first about this idea of letting go. And Mariana's obviously going to have to let go of these 106 bullets. But Jim, the last time I saw you was at the open, I can't remember what it's called, open OER16 conference, where you were keynoting. And one of the things you mentioned was that in your keynotes you usually talk about DS-106, and you know, you decided not to talk about DS-106. And you talked about DS-106, so it's kind of hard to let go.
Very good point. Yeah, I tried to let go, right? And I've been trying to let go of DS-106 for years. I mean, it's interesting because DS-106 is the thing probably that if I think about the work I've done in higher ed for the last, and I've been in higher ed a long time, almost 20 years, it was the most fun I've ever had. So when you have a lot of fun, like, it's hard to let go. But I think one of the other things about letting go that for me is exciting about DS-106 was, I mean, the idea that this is Bullet 107 for me is kind of resonant, because for me, one of the greatest moments I think I've had as a human was the moment when we were teaching the Summer of Oblivion, which I always talk about. I'm very nostalgic for it, which was, for those of you who don't know what the Summer of Oblivion was, it was the DS-106 course we taught right after the first open online DS-106 in the spring of 2011. And Martha Burtis, myself, Andy Rush, all of us at DTLT at the time, Tim Owens was just coming on as an employee. We decided to teach the class basically as kind of with a fake professor called Dr. Oblivion. And it was, the idea was that we were going to completely attack the idea of this professorship teaching DS-106 and make it this kind of fake reference to a David Cronenberg film called Videodrome. As it turns out, though, the students kind of got into it. There were about 25 of them at Mary Washington at the time. And they reacted by taking the narrative and taking it in their own direction. And they called their version of the class DS-107. And I love it because Bullet 107, DS-107, I think if there was an epiphany for me in the DS-106 experience, and it's still ongoing and it's not mine, but if my personal experience, there was an epiphany, it was that moment when those students basically completely decided to break off from the class that was being taught and define their own. And the idea that we created an experience where, A, they felt like they could do it, even in a spirit of fun, and B, we let go enough of the model to let them imagine that, still, for me, is the you know, pinnacle of my teaching career, without question.
How wonderful. You know, I think we used, I've forgotten that, but I think we used the audio from the DS-107 revolution for on the 2013 Headless for one of our radio shows. I've just remembered as you said that.
It was done by a student named Alan Liddell, who is an interesting story. You know, he came back from Afghanistan. He was in the military. He came back to school. And he actually was fascinated by the kind of role of rhetoric and propaganda. And so his whole vision of the class, and again, I think there have been thousands of different visions of what DS-106 means, and that idea of letting them all live and letting go. I mean, I really love, Mariana, that you held on to that quote. For me, it was probably a throwaway, but the way in which you contextualized it and used it to make sense of DS-106 is really powerful. It's like hearing someone else talk about the class in a way that I never even imagined. And then to see a student who's coming from a horrific situation in Afghanistan kind of reacting against notions of propaganda and power and knowledge as some kind of, you know, pure thing. And he turns that into a video of revolting against the institution and your professor to create a new and more beautiful course was, you know, I mean, I felt like you said after that, John, let's hang up our hooks. What are we going to say after that quote? That's exactly how I felt after this student did that. And he wasn't alone. There were many, many others, you know, 10, 15 other students riffing on this idea. And so DS-106 versus DS-107. And the other thing, which Mariana, I think is brilliant, that when you wrote this post, you know, this epic list of things, what I keep on coming back to is this notion of numbers. Like, DS-106 doesn't mean anything, but people have infused it with so many different meanings, and it's so cool to think that something that started as a kind of empty receptacle for whatever we want to make it became this kind of beautiful, chaotic, anarchic, creative community of people who wanted to hang out and make shit. I just love it. It's the best thing ever.
Well, I think a great example of how human beings will, you know, will create meaning out of just about anything you put in front of them once you get them talking about the thing.
So let me just swerve slightly back there, Jim, because one of the things you're saying about this idea of students taking over, and I know, I mean, I'm a primary school teacher, it was quite a different vibe, I guess, but times things have gone well have very often been when I've actually trusted pupils to get on with things, and I can think of several times when I've not done that, and I sort of disappointed myself. But it's quite a brave step in a higher education institution to let the students take over the course. Never mind our, you know, the web stuff and all the rest of it. It just seems like a really brave step, and not something that's normally done, especially in a... I guess the S106 was like a first-year course or something, you know?
It was. I mean, it was basically... It was a throwaway elective that became a kind of movement. Is really what it was. For first years, you know, people would always come out of the class and they'd be like, you know, the biggest complaint they had, it was always interesting on the... At least when I was teaching it, the biggest complaint they had was, you know... The class shouldn't be listed as a 100 because it's so much work. And I was always struck by that. Like, you know, it's no more or less work than you put into it. But so many of the students put everything into it, I think. I mean, from my experience, I have never really been let down by a student in DS-106. And they think they always are reacting to this idea of workload. But the point for me was always that you could let go because the course was designed in such a way that you drove your learning. And I think that for me was what was different about DS-106 as a classroom course. I think the open online people took it to a whole nother level in terms of feedback, in terms of being part of the community, in terms of modeling a kind of way of thinking and a way of creating for other people. I mean, they have been absolutely champions of this process. But for the students, I think it's one of the first times they were in a situation where someone said, I don't care what you learn about. I want you to document your learning and make it interesting. And just think about it, like, it's a simple revaluation of that question. But that simplicity, I think, for many, entailed a ton of work because they were invested. Time they didn't expect to be spending. They were like pouring into a GIF or a video. But not just a GIF or a video, but the idea of why this GIF, why this video, how they made it, what they were thinking. I mean, by the end of these classes, I learned a ton about these students as humans, as their kind of experience, as their thinking, as their kind of approach to what they're learning, as their critical acumen. And that's with something as simple as a GIF. So for me, DS-106, I mean, you can't do it in every class. Everyone always says, but I'm in this, I'm in that, and I can't speak to other disciplines, right? This is the discipline I had to work with. But what I found was, like, the experience of empowering a community to say, I want you to learn what you're interested in and share it back with us, has, you know, the dividends that came off of that one simple repositioning, the kind of folklore, and I talk a lot, so interrupt. But the folklore around DS-106, I do, I swear it, and I do not mind being interrupted. But the folklore around DS-106 as a transition between the class and then the cult, let's say, was what Alan Levine did a really great post about, talking about the fact that Martha Burtis did create the assignment bank. But one of the things that came out of that was the myth, and it wasn't a myth, it was kind of true. I had 10 assignments in the first two times I taught DS-106 that I asked students to do. And they played around with different things, but they were pretty stable assignments. It's not until Alan, Tom, Martha, and myself got together and said, you know what, maybe we shouldn't have the assignments as these stable kind of, you know, 10 commandments of what you'll do, but we actually frame it that people submit assignments
And then once they're submitted, they decide what they did. I mean, that was, you know, there's a lot of different moments that were very important. For me, the fact that not only we did that, but it worked, suggested to me not only that, you know, letting go is powerful, but letting go is not only powerful, but it gets a major response from students who are tired of being told always what to do. And I totally commiserate with them because I hate being told what to do. It's why I don't want to work in an institution anymore. I freaking hate it.
So it wasn't true that that Tom, Martha, and Alan said that your assignments sucked.
Tom Woodward, I believe. Now, I mean, Alan will go and find a link that I didn't know existed that maybe, you know, Mike Caulfield put on Wikidy back in 2005. I don't know, but there may very well be evidence that that's not the case, but. Tom Woodward tells me I suck all the time. So it wouldn't be surprising at all if he basically said that my assignments suck. He said they weren't so good. He did, absolutely. Like, but he always says that. And then I kind of laugh and cry, and then I tend to do better things. But, you know, I think the post that Alan did and the work that Martha did and Tom did, I mean, it points... Going back to bullet 107, which I love the context of this conversation, as you can tell, is that it wasn't any one person. It wasn't any one person's class. It was the best of the internet, right? It was us as a community of educational technologists and basic misfits who wanted to try something else. And I think why people still talk about DS-106 is as an experiment, it worked. It was not exploitative. It doesn't cost a lot of money. People could make it what they want. I mean, it had all the ingredients of what we think of when we think of kind of like ethical, powerful, fun teaching and learning. And I think that doesn't come from any one person. That comes from a community that's willing to experiment and a community that's willing to let go.
And I guess that. And, oh, sorry, John.
No,
I was just gonna say. I guess that for all of us, part of that is also the fact that the experimentation was being done in the open web, and for your students also, the kind of the investment and the working hard, the ones that were at the university, is because it's a very different thing that, you know, just my professor is going to be my audience and is going to give me my credits versus the whole world could read my post or look at my GIF. It's the whole issue of the who's your audience, isn't it? Anyway, sorry, John, you were going to say.
Well, to that, Mariana, just as a quick note before you jump in here, John, but just as that, Mariana, you were a perfect example of my students coming in saying, who is Mariana? Right? Like, so like there was a fifth person always in the room, right? There was a kind of this presence beyond the room that I think made DS-106 magical on the ground at UMW. And when I hear people are saying like, I'm teaching DS-106, but I'm doing it in Slack or I'm doing it in some, it's like, but like, that's not DS-106. Like DS-106 is that other presence of the open web. And without it, it's something else.
So, I mean, how did the switch flick from being an internal course to opening it up to anybody who was willing to use a hashtag, really?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Alan has effectively become the DS-106 historian. As well as effectively the DS-106, you know, central. I mean, he has been doing unbelievable amount of work for years to kind of really keep DS-106 as an ethos, as an approach, as something other people can use outside of the DS-106 community, as other projects. Like, he's been taking it, as he does with everything, and he's been making it accessible, he's been promoting it, and he's been thinking it through intelligently. So I think... I mean, the moment for me was a friend of Alan's who I met in Arizona had said, look, I really want the class you're teaching, because it was kind of open. And I think DS106 as a hashtag came before the open online class in 2011. But I think Donna, and I'm forgetting her last name, she teaches math at one of the community colleges in Arizona, said, look, I really want to know how to install my own domain in my WordPress. And you should really make that class open. Well, I said, well, it is open. We do everything online. This, you know, I have a WordPress blog. And I said, if you want to play along, that's fine. But I think soon after that, thinking of what Donna had said, say, hey, Donna Gaudette, that's it. Absolutely Gargoyle. And so I said, you know, why don't you play along and we'll open it up. That was probably in October. But then folks like Martha and Alan and Tom, you know, DS106 in that fall semester had some momentum. And I think we all started to feel like, hey, you know, if we did this open online and we invited people, and I think Alan had talked about this really intelligently too, like the difference between being open and being open and invitational was a huge difference. And I think the transition for me, to answer your question, John, was probably when we went from just being open to being open and invitational and saying, like, come on in. And, you know, the other elements we talked about, like the assignment bank, you know, we had been using the Daily Shoot. I got that from Alan, and we'd been using that to great effect, and then that turned into the Daily Create, which you know very well, Mariana. You have been an unbelievable steward of that for years. You know, it just kind of, the thing about DS106 in my mind, too, was like, and I could, you know this, John, because I tried not to talk about DS106 at OER16, and I couldn't. And I remember Brian Lamb saying to me, you just couldn't stop yourself from playing the hits. And it was kind of like true. I felt like Neil Diamond saying like, sweet Caroline, and the whole audience going, da 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 da. I just couldn't help myself. But like, the bigger point there about like DS106 as a community, as a class, is that if you look at it over time, even to when Alan came to UMW in 2012, the class itself kept on being built out as an infrastructure. So we had the assignment bank, then we had the Daily Create, then we had the site where students, a student designed element of the site where you kind of feature other people's work. For some reason, I'm forgetting the name, but it will come back to me shortly. And then you had the remix machine, right? Like the idea that DS106 was an experience was one thing, but then it became a kind of technical infrastructure that actually was viable. And Alan has been doing it for other communities in other contexts now for a while. And I think that's really cool because I think the spirit of DS106 was one thing. The technical infrastructure was related. And I think that idea of being openness and doing it online and open source mattered. But I think the two could be understood as, you know, kind of complementary and interdependent. But I don't know, like the thing about 107, right? The thing about this podcast, like it's kind of sad to me to think that this is it for you, right? I mean, I don't want to be gushy here, but like I kind of feel that way about DS106, and I'm in a weird situation. I think 3 or 4 years ago, I think I said, or 3 years ago, I said, like, I'm done with DS106 now. But I wasn't. And then I just decided, like, I'll never be done with DS106, no matter what happens. Like, even if it goes away as a class. I mean, DS106 made Domain of One's Own possible for us at UMW. It effectively made Reclaim Hosting possible for me. I mean, it has been the most single generative professional thing I've ever done. And I've come together with some of the coolest people in the field doing some of the coolest things. I mean, I love it. I freaking love it. I still love it. And I don't do it as much as I did. Admittedly, like, I'm not doing assignments all the time. I'm not doing Daily Creates as much as I probably should. At times I have moments. But, like, I still feel like everything I do on the web is DS106 related in some way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's, for me, I feel it. Doing the course and getting the ideas gave me permission to do a lot of other things, that I'll do things which are not assignments, but I'll stick a DS106 logo on it. you know, it's the sort of idea of it, like I'll do something stupid with JavaScript or something like that, and I'll put, you know, DOS 106 V code Jammer Kano at the bottom, because it feels that I've been given permission to mess about almost by DS 106.
And we love your wee ups. What would we do without your wee ups, John? But, I mean, DS 106 would not be DS 106 without them.
But I think it's just the idea of the course, and I've seen the course, you've seen it spin out. I mean, I have done two sort of small primary school based courses in Scotland based on the idea of, you know, kids working open online, aggregating stuff in WordPress. And, you know, you see other things all over the place, some things which claim to be the MOOCs, the ET MOOC and other MOOCs, which are basically using the DS 106 model and the infrastructure. If you, I mean, I think that's quite an interesting use of the word infrastructure. But it's a pattern or something like that.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. Rochelle Lockridge was just, she's been listening, and she was just, you know, tweeting about how, you know, another way, another experiment, another thing that was done, she did in 3M when she got a group of people from her corporation to effectively join the DS 106 open online community through her, via her. And that was, you know, another way in which, you know, the infrastructure, in a sense, was used to grow, I guess, another cell of the community, if you will. So there are lots of examples like that. I love your point about the difference between Jim, when you said about Alan making a distinction between the difference between it being open and being open and invitational. I think there is, because of course, you know, there is much that you can have access to, but it doesn't mean that you are making something out of that openness. So it's an interesting distinction too. And yes, I'd say that one of the things that attracted me to the DS 106 was exactly that sense of, you know, everyone is welcome.
Yeah, and the thing too there, and I agree, and I think that was a simple idea, but it was a major breakthrough, right? Like, we should be inviting people. And what really got people excited early on was gifts, right? Like, we kind of hit that at the right time where people were fascinated. Gifts were actually making a serious comeback at that point, and people in the community knew how to make them, and other people wanted to learn. And so I think even before the class started, there were like 100 or 200 GIFs had been created by X amount of people. And there was like a real momentum. Like, it was a magical time. I mean, it was a magical moment to say, hey, this is another way to do it. The problem on the other side of the invitation is, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's tricky, is that an invitation also suggests then you start to cohere around the community. The community has what people think to be an in and an outside, an inside and an outside. Mm. And like, I always think, and I try and be mindful of that, because I get very excited, I get very passionate, and I'm like, you know, I say pretty much whatever I want, but I also push hard for the things I believe in. And, you know, there could be like some people feel like they're, I know a lot of people have said to me, DS 106 is like, it's too much of a club, or there's too much of a kind of thing. And I mean, I've never seen it in that way, because obviously I'm biased, and I feel like, you know, DS 106 was also a reaction to people freaking out about edupunk, right? Like, everyone was like edupunk, and then they started talking about music. Like, what about country music? You know, what about like rock and roll? And I was like, you're missing the whole idea. Like, this isn't a one-to-one literal translation. You know, it's a kind of playing on the idea of punk, right? Mm. The thing I love about DS 106 is, like you were saying at the very beginning, Mariana, people could infuse it with whatever they wanted. It was just letters and numbers. And you and John could take it for 3 years and spin out a whole narrative that you've archived and developed beautifully that will stand as a testament to your thinking over the course of 3 years. That's a powerful thing. I don't care if it says DS-106 on it or not. That has nothing to do with what you've done. What you've done is you've actually created a narrative online together as a kind of, you know, as a kind of a couple, if we will. And I think that's like, that's the communal nature of the web, DS-106. I think, and I think anyone who comes there starting it up would agree, we aspired to. People working together online to create cool stories that weren't just stock, right? Like, not essay one, assignment one, you know, video one. They were
and there are so many examples, because I would say that every time that I've been involved in any of the radio shows and so on, it has been that kind of an experience where, you know, people were motivated by their interests, their passion, the time they had available, which, you know, it was easier for us as open participants, but always motivated by the actual thing that we were doing. But I do see the point that you're making about the sort of, you know, the in and out and the sort of price of entry. And I guess the only thing that one can do is be aware of that, be mindful of that, so that, and I think we all do this to the best of our ability when we see new people coming on Twitter, new people coming on Google+, or wherever, you know, and saying, I'm not sure where to go with this and what is this thing. We always do the very best we can to say, well, actually, you could look here, you could look there, you could do this, to do the very best we can to make people feel welcomed. But it is an issue, I think, particularly when you have, and John and I have spoken about this throughout this podcast, you know, that you do have a kind of narrative that has built over time, a kind of shared history that we talk about, different events, different characters, different things that people coming in new clearly do not know about. And I remember one of the early blog post that I wrote about, you know, kind of how do you make a success? Our recommendation I always made was you kind of need to look at the ongoing narrative and learn about, you know, some of the stories that are kind of running across through time, like the socks that you never sent.
Socks. I don't remember that part of the narrative. That's totally new to me, Mariana. This is new evidence coming up. I'm confounded.
But I think that's a lovely example, you know, a small thing that happened a long time ago, and then it gets changed, it gets shaped, it gets built on by people who understand more or less about what the original story was. But in a sense, I would say that is kind of the essence of the digital storytelling idea. And that if people look at just the assignment bank or just the daily create or, you know, whatever it might be, they're kind of missing something that really is shape-shifting in front of their eyes. And in a way, you could do, quotes, DS-106 and never see that unless you understand that there is a narrative that is building over time and that actually it's part of what we value.
That's right. And I definitely agree with that. And I also think, like, part of my idea was, at least, and not my idea per se, it's like when I was doing DS-106, I was doing DS-106 with people. So, like, I couldn't divorce my experience of the last 5 or 6 years with particular people like you, like John, like Alan, like Martha, like Paul Bond, right? Like Noise Professor. Like, the list goes, like Dr. Garcia, like, the list goes on and on. And so, like, for me, the class became a series of personal relations that when we talked online and when we joked online, we were going to joke about what we had done, because this wasn't a predefined syllabus, right? It was actually a group of people making history together. And I don't mean history in some global sense. I mean history in a very micro sense around an experience of learning, sharing, however you want to frame it. And so for me, it was like to not have the particularity of it, to try and generalize it, was a push to try and make DS-106 something. It wasn't. Right? Like, DS-106 never made any promise or contract that it was going to be always morphable and malleable to whatever you wanted to do it for, or that it could be applied to every class. Like, that was the paradox and the burden and the onus of the LMS. It had to abstract itself to be relevant to everything. The fact is there was no financial interest in DS-106 to make it other than what it was. Right? Like, it didn't have to scale. It didn't have to become, I think some of the elements that were shot out of it, like the assignment bank and the daily create, would absolutely be useful in other contexts. But I don't think the class as an idea ever needed to be more than what it ever was. And I think that's something, like, with internet thinking, people don't, like, respond to. It's like, well, shouldn't it have more people? Shouldn't it be bigger? Shouldn't it be more, you know, whatever the next thing is? Like, shouldn't there be a different interface? Shouldn't it be more user-friendly? Shouldn't people know exactly what you're talking about? Well,
more consistent. More consistent, Jim. I mean, really?
I hate consistency. I hate it. I do. I mean, and then, but the class is not me. That's the other thing. Like, it's not... I don't think it's just because I don't like consistency, DS-106 isn't going to be consistent. I would say, though, if you have hundreds of people who've gone through several years of their life spending time sharing, learning, and building, and then you walk into that context and you feel like, wait, I feel like an outsider. It's like, well, yeah, to some degree, there's going to be that space of outside. I think Alan did an excellent job reframing the entire website to be more inviting. But I think that the idea is like, how do I say this without sounding like a jackass? I don't know how I say it without sounding like a jackass. Like, DS-106 was also about being in it, being for life, investing in it, right? It wasn't about what it's going to do for me. It's what you can do for DS-106, not what it can do for you.
There's a poster for you that we need to make.
A propaganda. What can you do for DS-106? Not what it can do for you. And I feel like a lot of people, when they talk about DS-106, they're attracted to necessarily the chaos of it. They're attracted to the assignment bank. They're attracted to the daily create. They're attracted to something not because that's all they can wrap their head around, but I think because that's where they can see starting their own community with it. And that, to me, makes totally sense, because DS-106 doesn't need to be a singular community. You know, it could be what it was, and other people can take it and make it what it needs to be for them. I think the web is far more interesting as small, unique, in some ways impenetrable, but in some ways just weird or stupid communities, rather than a kind of Facebook we have now, which we start seeing, you know, what the end game of that is. So I think it's the opposite.
So kind of amen to that, Jim, I think is something to say. I just wonder, I mean, across the web and across, you know, because there's so many giant players, and you've obviously taken a leap and reclaim and the idea of people staking out wee pieces of web for themselves, and always there seems to be, you know, Medium or this or Slack or something coming along that's, you know, a huge monolith and everybody's got to go that way. Do you think the small bits loosely joined are going to make it through the onslaught of these monsters?
I don't know. I think they've done pretty good so far. Mm. I don't, like, see, I'm not, I don't consider myself like someone who has any proclivity towards making, like, future. I'm not a futurist. Like,
yeah.
I don't like be like, yes, this is what I think is going to happen and here's why. I don't really think, I'm not that much of a bold thinker. Like, I do what I think is fun, and I think it's still fun. And I think it's still relevant to have my own space, because I see enough on a daily basis these other sites. Like, think about Vine. if you've invested time and energy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Quickly that goes away. And I think Vine's great. Like, actually, I get entertained. My kids are huge fans of Vine. So they were more bummed than me. But I just think, like, for me, in this day and age, it just makes sense to have your own space, even if you use all the other social networking places. Because, you know, they're as fickle as anything online, you know. And I just feel more secure knowing Bava Tuesdays is out there. Like, knowing my posts and my images and my videos are all backed up on some web hosting. And it is kind of ironic. Well, it's not ironic, actually. I think it's actually relevant that the thing that got me into this whole field in the first place, which was cPanel web hosting, is what I've basically built a career around, to the point where Tim Owens and I started a company and are still giving people a little bit of their web. And it's cool for me because I believe in it. Like, it still remains utterly relevant to my life and to what I do. Like, I don't feel like I'm selling something I don't believe in. And I feel like when we were doing DS-106, the radical idea of 106 that's not that radical anymore is students can actually get their space and manage it and build it. And I think, you know, and Alan has written about this again and again, Martha too. Like, we went from what took about 2 weeks to figure that out to about an hour or two to figure that out. And I think there was some real powerful work that went into us thinking about it, to working through what we can do with Reclaim Hosting, to different installers like Installatron. Like, I do think that we spent time investing in those small options to make them more viable. And so when someone comes to me and says, well, I would do that, but it's so hard, I can actually fire back and say, you know what, it's really not. In fact, it's probably easier than Facebook, given what a shit show their interface is. You know what I mean?
No, it's click, click, click.
You'd be better off.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Talking of the sort of inclusive nature, a few people are going to drop in for a wee chat, I think. So I'm just going to try and pull in Ron, I'm just going to pull him on Skype. Ron is the... I had to call, I think I do. Yeah, Skype. Yeah, I'll do. You see expertise here. Ron is the leader on the Daily Create leaderboard. There have been 425 Daily Creates on the new Daily Create, daily.ds106.us, and Ron has done 442 of them, which is several more than there is. And I think he's here. Hi, Ron. Hello.
He can't catch his breath.
Maybe he can't hear you.
Can you hear me, Ron? Oh, there he is. Yeah, we're webcam off mode to save the precious bandwidth. But how are you doing? So why, Ron, I think is the question. Have you done...
What an introduction it is.
Yeah, 442 of the 427 Daily Creates so far.
Yeah, that's like you have extra credit.
Yeah.
You did like 7 extra Daily Creates that you can just skip a week.
Oh, wow.
Jim, he wants his socks as extra.
Ron, can I ask you, can I just level with you? No matter what Mariana says, there were never any socks. Okay. Dating back to 2012.
I already have my winter hat, and Sarah made that for me. DS-106 woolen hat. She knitted it for me.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Because you're now like one of my favorite people on Twitter. We're constantly going back and forth. I don't know why, but you tend to kind of like, you know, how and why did you start doing Daily Creates, and why have you done them almost every day for the last year and a half?
Well, because it keeps my mind flexible and helps me to stay creative. And they're like doing your little exercises on the piano every day. Each morning I play the piano for maybe 15 minutes, and I do my scales, and I do my exercises, and I do my assignment, have lessons every 2 weeks. But doing a little bit of these exercises every day keeps your fingers flexible. And the same happens for me when I do the daily creates. It keeps my mind flexible in creativity.
That's awesome, because you have been a machine.
No, not a machine.
No, seriously.
A human.
A human machine of great power.
Oh, yeah.
I like it, though, how you compare doing the daily create to playing the piano. Like, that's a really cool comparison in terms of, like, I mean, I think one of the things that Martha and Alan had said when we were teaching it together, like, the daily create was just that. It was an exercise to keep you flexible and limber and do something creative for 15 minutes, like you're saying, with the piano. Mm-hmm. And, like, basically took that idea and grafted it on top of digital storytelling. And I really think what you're saying works perfectly.
Yeah, and the point is, because of learning to work with the digital tools did help me to come out with my creativity, so to call. I'm not calling myself an artist, but doing stuff every day and sharing it on the on the web is like like your vulnerable. It's learning to be vulnerable, because people can find it really shit what you make, and well, that's okay, that's their opinion. But it did help me to do other stuff. And now in December, with a colleague of mine, we're showing in the library here our first book, which we made together. And I would never have done that if I didn't have the exercise with coming out with little creative stuff every day in DS-106.
That's awesome. So you're going to be a published author soon?
Oh, well, it's just a book, just our first book for children, but we're already working on a second book. We wrote the stories together, and I made the drawings to them. And it's now this week we'll go to the printer and have the book printed.
Wonderful. Now, there's a story, a DS-106 story.
Well, it is.
It's crazy. That's
wonderful.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the students, I was fascinated by this. A student who I'm like so blonde, that was her name. Her name was Sarah Koontz. And she came, she had done a semester. She was an amazing student, right? She just did awesome, cool stuff, ran with it. And she came at the end of the semester, had taken a photo shoot with a bunch of other students and myself. And at the end of the semester, she came and she had a hardback book of her photographs that she had published. And she's like, here, this is one of the products of the class, and I wanted to have a copy. Like, wow.
Well, that's cool, isn't it? That's really cool.
And it goes to the point, I think, that we've been talking about a little bit over the course of this conversation. Is like for me, I think what's cool is we have this hashtag called DS-106 that allows us to see. We have the daily create that you've been producing 447 times, some ungodly number. And the idea that, like, we all take whatever it is in our own direction. It's what I loved about the daily shoot the first time I saw it, thanks to Alan. It's what I loved about the daily create or the assignment bank. Like, you have this shared object that, say, you, Ron, and I, or Mariana could both look at, or all look at. Mm-hmm. And then 3 hours later, we would all have something radically different based on who we were.
Yeah, that's the fun of it. Yes, but you need the limits to become creative. So the assignment calls gives you some limits in you have to work well, you can work within the limits of the assignment, but the limits itself is needed to become creative. Because if you say, just make something beautiful, that's too wide. You need the limits. You need the borders and the assignment, and then allow the people to go beyond the limits, to go beyond the borders.
Or even react to the prompt, right? I knew a lot of like of the early DS-106, or even now, people will take the prompt and then say, well, I really didn't like that. What I wanted to do is this, and that was just as good.
Like Sandy,
whenever there is an animated GIF in the horizon, she, I don't want to do that, but have this. Because she doesn't like animated GIFs, and she's always having conversations about why on earth do we bother, Sandy Brown Jensen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's number two on the Daily Create leaderboard.
Well, and a little controversial, if I may say, there was a small controversy a little while back because Sandy was saying, how come that Ron is number one? And why is it that all the Daily Creates that were done in the old site weren't carried over? I think she was.
I remember that. Miffed,
as we say in the UK.
Yeah, she was. I agree. And rightfully so. Because Ron, you stole her thunder. Now you're publishing books, right? And who knows what's happening to Sandy, right?
Well, well,
I'm kidding.
She already had her paintings in an exposure already.
Well, it was interesting. I'll tell you, one of the things, speaking of Sandy and speaking of DS-106 and that kind of idea, like one of the things that struck me is, so I thought I had in 2014, the fall of 2014, I had come back to teaching DS-106. And I thought I had this great idea, right? Like, I was going to teach DS-106 based on The Wire. And John, I know you had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, yeah.
And I did, and a bunch of them did. And I remember Sandy saying, but why does it have to be a kind of violent inner city cop show? And it struck me, because it's like, the only reason I think I've ever done anything I've done in DS-106 is because I wanted to do it. And so it was funny that when you think about DS-106 had become mature enough after, you know, 3 or 4 years, that there were people who really counted on what you wanted to do and an expectation that it would work for everybody. And that was some of the dangers of a themed course, I think. But that was also, for me, some of the dangers of doing what people expected. Like, I didn't actually ever want to be in teaching a class where I was actually doing what someone else wanted me to do.
Yeah, but do you remember what happened with the 106 Western theme? Because it started off like a cowboy showdown, and but... well, very soon it started to drift to Western girls and Western women and what they did in the form of century, etc.
Yeah, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah,
and of course the point always was, you know, the fact that you've got a theme doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go big fan or absolutely love it. You can also critique it, and that's the point of it, really.
Yeah.
And we've done quite a lot of that when we were doing the noir stuff as well. And and who was it? Was it Karen Young started to look at the role of women in that? And that's where the Jim Groom beer commercial came from.
That's right.
She started to study like all of this kind of the sort of noir idea and the role of women and so on in that. So there was always, again, that space where people could go, I love this thing, or I hate this thing, and here is why. I've been looking at it, and this is what I've created as a result of my connection with the theme or the idea.
And you learn all this new stuff about it. Well, I never knew about women doing bronco riding or women throwing in hong ball and being better than the men hitting the trying to hit the ball. So you learn a lot that has been kept out of the history, and mostly the history of women has been striked out. So it was very, not just being creative, but you learn a lot about things you never knew about.
It's interesting, too, because like One of the things about noir and DS-106, what was it, The Wire 106, even Twilight Zone 106 or 106 Zone, I think we called it, is like when you started to theme the course like that, you started to actually open up some of these other topics, like you're talking about with noir, because there's a whole series of questions about the role of the femme fatale or the role of the city or the role of the idea of whiteness versus darkness. And like those are topics that you'll deal with in maybe film classes, or you'll deal with in a literature class, or maybe in a sociology class. But here we have this unassuming digital storytelling class that was originally a complete throwaway, now becoming a kind of central humanities, literature, art, sociology-based examination of things like Baltimore and the inner city, of questions of police violence. Like, you start having all these different, complex, not always easy conversations. And I felt like the maturity of DS-106 over time in terms of themes really started to bring us into a very interesting relationship to how the media and the expression through media we were doing in DS-106 is central to the examination of a lot of these disciplines. So for me, it was like the flowering of this whole thing in such amazing ways. Like when John found the technology to cut together various pieces through a kind of supercut from The Wire, and I would show it to my students and they were like, jaws would drop. Because everything we were talking about in the class could be captured very quickly in the video by just searching and kind of clipping out certain pieces. Like whenever Lester said, you know, follow the money, or whenever like you had this, you would have all these things come up in some really interesting ways. And John, I don't remember all the different ways you sliced it and diced it, but I was blown away.
So that gets back to this permissions thing, I think, and also the way that, because it's digital storytelling, you can use new tools and new ways of slicing across media that bring out things that you don't necessarily know. And one of the things which I've never managed to do is there's a guy in some... I'm really bad at remembering names, but American University, who does a lot of, you know, every squashing videos down so that you see the color scheme of the whole video. But he also uses software which gives you almost a 3D view of the video, and just amazing stuff you can do with the tools we've got. And I think DS-106 opens it up and gives you permission, I guess, to look at these things with digital tools in, you know, new ways.
Another example, and I think you, Jim, wrote a blog post on this, and I'm not going to remember the name of the tool, but it was that that tool that allowed you to create all the sort in one image all the shots of a particular clip of video, and you could just select your clip and then you get, and I've used it since for various purposes, and you would get just one image with each each shot in a still frames. And what I remember, I think it was a Daily Create or something somebody suggested, and I remember seeing this thing and going, what's the point? And why would you want this? And then the next, and I did it, and I went, meh, I have no idea. And then the next day or so, you wrote, Jim, I think it was you wrote this post saying about, you know, how it could enable you, kind of like what you're talking about with the supercats and things. It would enable you to pick a scene and then break it up and watch it. And I went, of course, you could analyze an immediate. And I hadn't realized myself what the technology could allow you to do until, yeah. I guess, somebody who'd kind of gone, this is what you could do with it, had shown me.
It's funny, too, and that's called, like, it's called Print a YouTube Video. I think that's what it's called. It's just a bookmarklet. And I did do that, and I just love the way in which it visualized it. But, like, that thing you're describing, Mariana, is what happened to me again and again with DS-106. Like, GIFs,
at the beginning of the class, like, I just thought gifts were fun. You know, by the next end of the semester and into the following year, I was like, gifts are, like, crucial for thinking about how scenes of films or TV work. They're crucial for slowing down time and letting us watch and rewatch closely. So, I mean, gifts then became a means for thinking about close watching. And then talk about radio. Like, radio is not something I really considered really very, very closely as a thoughtful kind of scholar. Not that I'm a thoughtful scholar, but just in general. And then we had DS-106 radio obviously come, which we're on right now. Right? The airwaves are alive. But, like, the idea that that became an apparatus for students doing probably the most amazing work in the class all told. And that's a kind of very interesting moment where if you would have told me a radio station for teaching and learning, I would have said, what's the point? But then you're saying, oh, wait, yeah, bumpers. Oh, yeah, commercials. Oh, yeah, actual audio programs. Oh, figuring out how to produce these things, figuring out how to work with open, attributable resources. I mean, the radio became the centerpiece of the class. And that was an absolute afterthought when we went into the class in 2011. Like, no one was like, yes, we're going to do this via radio. That happened like week three.
The thing that I know that I keep noticing when you know, when all of you talk, particularly about the beginning of DS-106, is something that in education, you know, and I've often kind of come across the idea that, you know, you use what's available in order to support learning. So you're not setting out to say this is the box and this is what we're going to do and this is point 1 to 10. You're saying whatever happens, we will use for the aims of learning, whatever our topic, whatever our subject. And rather than go, oh, this is and this in a sense is what creativity is, you know, the whatever happens, how can I use this in order to show, demonstrate you know, some whatever it is that I'm wanting my students to learn. And I think, you know, all of you and DS-106 as an entity is a great example of that particular principle.
Well, yeah. The point, there is, I always say at my job, there is a difference between learning and education. And the point with DS-106 for me is that I learn, but it doesn't need to be education. There doesn't need to be any learning goals or objectives to be reached. It's having fun and knowing that while doing it, you learn a lot, but you never know beforehand what you're going to learn.
But yes, I'd say that is true for us as open participants. It's a different thing, I think, for the students that, you know, are doing it for credits and are following it as a more of a traditional thing. And I think that the gift and the wonderful thing is the ability to bring something of that freedom that you're describing, Ron, into the context of a traditional higher ed course with all of the constraints, and that is the thing that I think makes it special in that context.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I'm conscious of time. We've gone way over time. Are you okay, John, to keep going for a bit? How are we doing?
Yeah, we're just running over an hour, which is even longer than our usual 50-minute half-hour shows. All podcasts that I'm involved in, I always aim for half an hour.
We're at the minute seven. We're at the hour minute seven mark.
Oh,
that's kind of cool. Given this is bullet 107.
107.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think we must end now.
Yep.
We need to make it 207.
Yeah. So we've kind of kicked this about, and we haven't actually talked about leaving DS-106, and Jim, you said now you've realised that you're not going to leave DS-106. I mean, Mariana and I are certainly going to leave this podcast. I think it's run its course, and very often I feel what we've done is 106 bullets where we've said the same thing from different degrees or angles on it, because there's some core of DS-106 that is really fascinating. It's very hard to put your finger on, and I think you've nailed quite a lot of them, or at least nicked the edges of them with your nails, Jim, tonight. That's something that makes it different from, you know, a course online, an LMS course, things that even try to be open. And I guess maybe part of it is the engagement of the instructors.
Yeah, I mean, that was a dangerous thing in the beginning. I mean, it's funny because I look back on DS-106 and I am nostalgic by nature. And then DS-106, obviously, when something's as good as it has been for so long, like, you know, it's a fun thing to talk about, and you can kind of get glossy-eyed. But when I first started teaching DS-106, a lot of people said, of course you can do it, because you have a big personality, you're outgoing, you know, you're kind of Jim Groom, quote unquote. And I always thought, like, what the hell does that mean? Like Jim Groom. Like, Jim Groom is a flawed human being like everybody else. And I do have certain, and I've been teaching for a while, and I have certain characteristics. But I think some of that was laid to rest once Martha, Alan, and Paul, and many other people, whether it be Scott Lockman, Scott Lowe, otherwise known as, who should definitely get a shout out in this podcast, but or radio show, who's the king of radio. But like, it started to be like, A, that was out. Like, it wasn't just about personality. But the other thing to me about DS-106 was that we were teaching each other how to teach. Like, we were teaching each other, and people were teaching my students, and the idea of teaching was not like only you can do it. It was like, no, DS-106 proved that together we can all do it, right? Paul Bond taught with me beyond DS-106. We went on to teach three different classes, which were all really fun and different, because we collaborated in DS-106. It was never really a financial venture for either of us, because none of us ever really made money off of teaching DS-106, because it was adjunct salary. I didn't do it as part of my Mary Washington job, and anyone who's taught an adjunct salary at Mary Washington will tell you it's pennies on the dollar for the time you spend. So, like, we were kind of free of this being like, this is my thing, because A, the money wasn't there, and B, the interest why people came was not that. And so I think when we started realizing that we're doing this, and by doing it together, we're creating something bigger. And I think anyone who's been a part of it believes that. I think DS-106 is something bigger than a professor or a teacher. Hence why Dr. Oblivion was trying to explode the idea of the professor to begin with. I think it kind of pushed out of that, John. I think it kind of said as a class, like, you know, of course, the way the classes run, you need a figurehead like Dr. Oblivion, and you need students who pretend to want to get grades, but at the end of the day, none of that's important.
I like that, students who pretend they want to have grades. I like that quote.
Yeah, it's true.
So just on that, Jim, have you ever had students who didn't make the grade in DS-106 who drop out? I mean, I don't mean open online, because, you know, we just drift by, like, dip in and out. I always think of myself as driving by, actually. spraying bullets or something.
Yeah, 106 bullets.
Yeah, but students who had taken the actual class...
Who failed? You know, it's funny that one of the things that I did, and I think it's kind of, you know, everyone taught it. Like, so when whoever taught DS-106, we had different approaches about what we did for grading. And my approach for grading is I didn't grade. Like, if students came and they did their shit, like, they got an A. And if students tried to fail, I usually annoyed them enough that they got an A.
Like, so my policy was basically like, no one gets out alive, right? Like, if you're in, you're in it, and you're either going to drop or you're going to get an A. And that's usually how it worked out. Because I'm not a huge fan of grading. I thought it was just way too much time and energy on top of what we were already doing. I think students needed feedback. I think students got feedback. I think students needed to know where they were at. And I think we did always take care of that. But I think, you know, for me, DS-106 was more like a contract, right? You were going to contract to put yourself out there and engage it. And, you know, some students did that better than others. There's no problem. But it's not like any student in DS-106 ever came back to me and said, like, why did they get a B and I got an A? Like, by the time they were done with DS-106, they were either A, absolutely thrilled to be done with all the work because it was a ton of work, or B, they realized that they had built themselves a space. They had narrated their learning. They had actually built something that was actually useful and part of them. And I think when you do that as part of a process, I would hope at the end of it, the last thing you were concerned about was a grade, because you knew what you were and you knew what you were worth. And no grade that I could ever put on a piece of paper would evaluate you effectively.
But also I remember seeing some of the letters and so on that you would send to students at the beginning, the contract as you describe it, Jim. And I also remember you being always very clear about what it involved. And I remember hearing you say somewhere about that, you know, you used to be very clear about this idea of, you know, it's open, it's online. And that's non-negotiable, as it were. So if, you know, so if that's not something that you're willing to work with, then this course may not be for you. And I think that clarity probably helps in terms of who chooses to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think on top of that, Mariana, like after the first couple of years, like up and even through when Alan and I were teaching it in 2012, like the class was starting to self-select. So people knew what it was. They knew how much work it was. But even after that, 2013, 2014, people who came to DS-106 were well aware of, A, what it was and what they were in for, far more than they were in 2011. The students in 2011 were like, what is this? You know, like they were completely like nothing they'd ever seen. By 2013, 2014... DS-106 was kind of a thing at Mary Washington. Like, we could run as many as four sections, whereas before we would run maybe one or two. People, it had a demand. So people actually, and that's another thing to think about, like, when you kind of got rid of the grading structure, or at least I did, and you said the grade's not going to matter because there's going to be more work than all your other classes probably combined, and they still do it, I think that's a different kind of testament to what students may or may not want. And not all of them want DS-106, but at least they know what it is and they run the other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's cool to have that kind of commitment of your students in the course. It's really cool.
The UMW students, see, one of the things, Ron, that was interesting, and again, Martha and Alan could tell you the same thing, but what we realized is, you know, the online community was amazing, and the online community was often there. When the summer class goes 5 weeks, they could stay there most of the time, but a 15-week semester is a long time, and the kind of, you know, you're pushing past week 7 of the audio and into the video, and like, shit's starting to get heavy. Like, you're starting to do a lot of work, and it's starting to pile up. And the online people kind of start to diffuse out there, and it's just you and those students for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And, you know, that's an intense time. And, like, things calm down. It's not so much fanfare online. You're just trying to push through. But I firmly believe that, like, that class was like a serious experience. Like when we did it at Mary Washington 15 weeks, we were not playing around. It was all or nothing. I love that. Like that's how I want to live my life. Like I just want to like go through it. I don't want it to be like, oh yeah, it was all right. No, I want them to come out and like, even if they all go gray like I did in 2011 thanks to DS-106, that's all right, because that's what it should be like. They should all go gray like me.
There you go. John, would you like to follow that?
Well, I'm just wondering, can I blame DS-106 for my grayness?
Absolutely, it seems
unlikely.
Now I know why I became gray. It's because of DS-106. It has nothing to do with my age.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I'm surprised actually with 400 odd dailies under your belt, Ron, that you have any hair left at all.
Exactly, that's next.
It will just go, and eventually you'll just be a cursor or something. sketching gently. Yeah. So I can't actually remember the structure we had here on the show. I'm thinking it's probably time to start wrapping it up. We were hoping Viv and David would come in and sing a tune, and other people could have come in, but we've just left them all out there because it's quite hard to figure that out as you're going. Maybe we should play a wee bumper. There's quite a few people at the, again, this is a DS-106 thing, Jim, that you know people have sent us over the years bumpers of, you know, to introduce the show, and folk give you stuff in DS-106. They tend to give you help, information, tools, all sorts of stuff very, very freely, and just to be a part of that, I think, is wonderful, and it's a great, you talk about it being like the web with less trolls, but it's also with more nice guys, and I don't know how that has come about, but it feels like the most comfortable place online to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as long as you don't want socks, it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, I think socks are overrated myself, you know. As old hippies, never wear socks.
That's great. Like, this whole thing that socks became a thing.
Yeah.
Like, for me, that's what I love about DS-106. It's completely like, it's non sequitur after non sequitur after nonsense after nonsense. And I personally really, I jive off that. I just think it's fun. And, you know, I would much rather, you know, surround myself with a group of people who are going to go to lengths of making, you know, Big Lebowski gifts about socks that never came, spending hours on the most ludicrous things because they want it.
Yeah.
That's the promise of the web. Everything else is just people trying to sell you something.
Michael did in this latest sock drama, Michael went off and did a video in the middle of his busy teaching schedule. Michael Branson Smith. And suddenly this video pops up and you think, wow, how did he find the time to do that?
So again, I mean, the words we haven't really used enough, I think, tonight is riff. This idea of DS-106 being a series of riffs off different people and different things. And I think one of the really nice daily creates we had a wee while ago was, I can't remember actually what it was, but it was something about, you know, what is DS-106? And
the rules.
Mm. Yeah, the rules. And I think riff and be riffed is probably as good a rule as any. I'm going to try this bumper now. Can I just say, Jim, huge thanks for taking time out. I don't know what time it is in Italy at the moment. It's 9:15 here. And Ron, too, for coming in and joining us on this last show. I don't know, Mariana, have you got any
final thoughts? final thought. No, I'm just, it's, I think we've said all that we need to say. I think in some ways I'm quite sad, but it's the last one. I also, you know, have a sense of, you know, things need to end before other things can start. And in some ways, as we've said today, really, that, you know, what we've learned and what we do, a lot of it, you know, always goes back to the relationships, not the number. And not anything else that we might talk about in terms of the infrastructure either. And I do think that, you know, the ES-106 is a lovely example of that. That if you keep in mind the fact that you are actually dealing with human beings and building relationships, then, you know, so many things take care of themselves. So many other things take care of themselves. But it's been wonderful. And I miss talking to you every Sunday, John. What are we going to do? I don't want to know what to do with myself.
Yeah, you're probably going, oh, this is nice.
What am I going to do with my Sunday nights?
I think we'll talk about that later. I'm going to just ping on this bumper. This is, and just because okay. I've got the controls, I think this is my favourite of all the bumpers we've got, mostly because it takes me back to my childhood.
Good spell with John and Marianne, a good spell. They're top and honor and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go and give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
So, I think we'll hang up episode 107 of the DS106 Good Spell now. And this is Radio DS106, and we are for life.
For life,
for
indeed.
For life!
Sure.